Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the episode of the How's Your Touch podcast. We've had a couple big Scotland games this week, two competitive fixtures, and I'm joined by Matt, as always, to cover those fixtures and look ahead to the upcoming weekend in the SVPL. If you don't already, make sure you're following us on Instagram and Twitter at How's Your Touch _, as well as our Substack for longer form articles. Yeah, so let's just get into it. Matt, how are you doing today? How have you reacted to the games? You feeling good?
Right. Just before we do anything, I'll apologize to everyone if the audio is worse because it's my fault. Because I'm not well, so I don't want to infect Peter. I might sound like deeper than normal, but you know, that's
I don't know, it's kind of attractive.
Okay. Thank you. I feel the same as I did when we recorded last week about Scotland, which is not great.
Yeah. We won a game.
We did win a game.
Let's chat about
the game. There's a lot to talk about with regard to Scotland on and off the pitch. It's been a bit of an underwhelming international break, is how I'll put it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's start with the first game. We played Serbia in Serbia on Friday night. Played out a riveting 0-0 draw that was actually almost like torture, I think.
A lucky 0-0 draw. If we're gonna talk about it, we might as well talk it properly. They had more shots than us, they had better chances than us, they should have had a penalty, and Lee Gibson probably dropped the ball over the line. So all in all,
not a great
good
shot.
Result. 0-0.
No.
Yes. Yeah, it's just the same problems over and over and over again.
It's very hard to talk about the games in isolation because it's the same issues. So you just end up naturally talking about it as a whole very quickly rather than it. Because you talk about that game, there's not much to say other than it was Drake and boring, which is the same that happened in the Slack game, which is the same that was at the Pinnata Cup. So you end up just kind of...
I think in the Serbia game, there were some different things that were wrong that were the same things that have been wrong in the past. So like Cuthbert way too deep for the whole game, basically spent just doing nothing, which he solved by playing a centre back in midfield instead of her in the second game, and Lauren Davison came off too early. It was her first ever start. And I just don't understand where the logic comes from of like, you're giving her that opportunity. She's played well. She was actually the best of our front three in that first half, in my opinion. Yeah, how is she supposed to make her mark on this team? Just go and bring all your players with 50 odd caps that will be retired after the Euros and go and draw 0-0 with them. Like, it's just so pointless.
Yeah, well, my gripe about young players as well is, you know, Amy Gallagher, who's double figures goals and assists, top goal scorer in the league, top assistant in the league, doesn't seem to get any game time at all. Yeah, Jane Ross and Sarah Ewens get priority. Both good players, but
I would love
Amy
to
Gallagher
have
got more
been
goals
in.
than both of them combined, I think, so in the same
Yeah,
league.
I'd love to have asked him. I'd love to just ask him outright, Pedro, who is the SWPL 1 top goal scorer? And I'd love to see what he says, because I genuinely, like, in my heart, do not believe that he knows that off the top of his head. It's the same frustration. I mean, when we're talking about the Slovakia game, a winnable game at home, he starts two players under the age of 29. Two.
Yeah.
He brought them both off.
And then it was
three of his five subs were under 29 as well. But, like, both the ones that started are established Scotland internationals already. The ones that come on are established Scotland internationals already. I mean, I guess other than maybe Amy Rogers, but I feel like she is at this point.
But I think even
and it's just like
both games were like reserve performances and like having control of the defensive structure or whatever nonsense you want to say, which I just is incredibly underwhelming given the caliber of player we've got is like so good.
When he talks about wanting to play quick, attacking, possession football and stuff. And I watched the Wales game because I hate myself. So I watched Wales Kosovo. And like, yeah, it's only Kosovo. Same time, it's Serbia and Slovakia. Like, come on.
It was just the Philippines a while back.
Yeah. And I watched Wales and wow. Watching them play through the lines, the diversity and the chances they created, they go out wide, they go through the middle. Rachel Rowe is comfortable picking up the ball, taking three players on and having a shot. under a manager that's been there like 2 weeks. And it's
Yeah.
like, then you watch Scotland play Slovakia, and it's like every pass, like Sam Kerr receives the ball in midfield on the turn, but then she turns around and passes it backwards to Rachel Corsey, who then passes it back out to Nick Doc, who then passes it back to Rachel Corsey, back to Sam Kerr, to Erin Cuthbert, back to Rachel Corsey, out wide again. And eventually someone hits an aimless cross that goes nowhere, and then we lose the
Well, I
ball, and
think,
then we win it back again. And it's just a cycle of that, and it's boring and slow, and I hate
well,
it.
I think when I'm watching it, I actually do think all players are very good, very smart. I think they're doing what they're asked to do, and they're doing it perfectly. And this is what that gives you.
My biggest complaint to the players is that they should go off script more often.
Yeah,
Like,
but if you
we
watch
had a
it,
free kick just before the goal in this in a similar position to the goal on the opposite side, and the ball ended up back with Nick Doc at the
yeah.
halfway line. Like, it's not a shooting opportunity, but if you're gonna do something that isn't just cross it in, lay it off and just have a shot from the edge of the box. Like, what are we doing where every ball has to go backwards and we have to be so slow and labored in possession?
Yeah.
And for it all to just be every single time Fiona Brown or Lisa Evans will get the ball in the wing and cross it in, but Jane Ross won't be there. Because,
Yeah, but that's what I
like,
mean by like the style of play and stuff. Like if you watch it, when we're in defense, the players get back into formation quickly and they're like into a rigid structure, clearly put into where they are meant to be. There's like obvious like press triggers. You watch it, the fullbacks will press at certain points and they're doing it. And then in attack, there's obvious patterns of play, as you say, like getting into the wing and crossing the ball in the box. And those players are doing that because they're incredible footballers who are professional and have played at top level in England, America, etc., who can do that. It's just that tactic is trash. So like they're
exactly.
doing what they're asked to do perfectly. It's just what they're being asked to do is fucking terrible.
Well, to provide some optimism, we're joint top of the group now. We're unbeaten. We've won a competitive game, even though competitive games don't matter.
Yeah.
Having less than a 50% win record when you've played teams like the Philippines is not good, especially considering Belgium managed to pick up wins in that Nations League campaign that we were in, where he's complaining that we couldn't possibly have beaten England or the Netherlands. But, cast that aside,
Ignore
because
everything
we're
else
like,
about it.
to be positive, we have got 4 points, we've kept two clean sheets, and we scored a goal.
Yeah,
I concerned that the.
my point about the whole break is the players. Like, I think you what they are very good. There is a real togetherness in that squad. They perform almost in spite of like the managers being bad. So that's my hope,
Yeah,
is
I mean,
that they're very good. And we've got a lot of young players that will come through at some point eventually who will improve that squad.
Yeah, important to mention the under-19s won both their games. I do think it's absolutely great. Mia Macaulay against the teams that we were playing in the under-19s, like Cyprus,
Yeah.
genuinely, that's just overkill. She, funnily enough, she has more goals in the SWPL than both Jane Ross and Sarah Ewens.
Yeah, that's surprising, isn't it?
So, like, she should be in the senior team. But,
Seeing her line up against a bunch of like 17-year-olds in like Liechtenstein, wherever they were, is just
Yeah,
bonkers.
like in Cyprus, like,
Yeah.
what is the point? It's so, yeah, anyway, that's beside the point. But yeah, we have a really talented 19s. I'm a little concerned that the only goal and only real chance we actually created was from a set piece, and it wasn't a
Oh yeah,
good set piece. It was just
I
a
was gonna
deep
say that.
cross that the keeper messed up.
As a Celtic fan, relying on your centre back to score these goals gets you so far.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a tactic that it's okay. Like, it's not the
And
worst thing in the
yeah.
world. I don't think we can do it as consistently though, because like, I love Jenna Clark. She is not Caitlin Hayes,
No.
and she is our only real height. And as I say, that realistically, that was not a great set piece delivery. The keeper should have just come and punched it. He
Yeah.
didn't. Then the header is also straight at the keeper, who kind of falls instead of just standing up. And
Yeah.
it's a whole real. Genuinely, I would love to see the expected goals, because I actually think Slovakia would have been ahead of us on that.
But a positive from that game is that I think Lee Gibson is still awesome. I think she's
Yeah.
better than McKeever, but whatever. I think, and let's talk about the Serbia Slovakia game. I can think of like four top of my head, like proper good save she made. That she's just a solid keeper. And I mean, I
I
don't
think
not I'm not trying to put players against each other or whatever here, but McKeever did nothing to deserve to get the number one jersey off of Lee Gibson at all. And
no,
Lee Gibson did nothing to lose it. She just plays in England.
she apparently passes it better with her feet. Eartha Kummings is better than both, but in my opinion, but like, that is an opinion that I do not have evidence for other
No,
than
well, that's positive to
vibes.
have three. We have like three, probably.
But
Like
we do.
McKeever's a really keeper. I just don't,
Jenna
in terms
Fyfe
of
as well is
like,
really good.
yeah, in terms of like
I know
squad
that, like,
management, I don't get why McKeever just got put in number one and a legend like Gibson with
no.
all 50 caps is just like,
But
ah, oh well.
other than the only thing I can think of is that it's because of age, and you're going, well, Lee Gibson's probably going to be retiring from international duty at the very least at some point in the next 2 to 4 years. Sandy McKeever's got another decade in her, so let's bring Sandy McKeever in. But then, like, if you're thinking about that in goal, why are you not thinking about that anywhere else on the pitch? On that note, I do also want to say Jenna Clark had a really good game. Just purely defensively, I think she was probably our best defender. And like Sophie Howard had a great game defensively. She didn't have much to do, to be fair. But and Rachel Corsey also was playing in midfield, so was doing a lot of stuff that Rachel Corsey should not have to do.
Yeah, I would say central defence is like a probably our weakest area, I would say. Not because it's
I
necessarily
would,
weak, but I think everyone else is
I
pretty
would
strong, I would
too.
say. Other than Corsey and Howard and Clark, that's probably our best three at the moment.
I would too, but I also think we've left our best young defenders at home because neither Girasole nor Hunter got called up. And I just do not understand what the stance is where it seems to be that Hearts players that are playing regularly and actually performing at a really high level don't get called. Like their defense is their best, the best part of the team. And we'll talk about it later because we're going to talk about the Hibs Hearts game. And like, I'm so worried because they've got the best defensive record in the league outside of the top three. Two of them are Scottish. And they're both young.
They're just sitting
Call
there.
one of them. Like when Leah Eddy drops out, and I hope Graham Falk has said that it's nothing major. So I'm less worried than I was 24 hours ago, but I'm still very worried. But like, when she pulls out, why are we going to Kelly Clark? I know you love Kelly Clark. I love Kelly Clark as like a SWPL player. I think she's great. But like, we've already got experienced defenders in the squad.
Yeah,
It
Kelly
just, it
Clark
does my head
seemed
in.
like a convenience call up, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know. I was disappointed with the performance. I'm glad about the result. And then Pedro's post-match happened and what?
Yeah, well, I guess let's chat about like because the games have come and gone, and we got 4 points, and it's like a good start to the competitive qualifiers, which is kind of all to say at the moment. So I guess we can chat a bit more about Pedro and the national team setup as a whole. As you mentioned, that post match press conference where he kind of, I don't know, he
Tried
seems,
to fight the media.
yeah, gone off the rocker, completely rattled by, you know, if it's not us,
Wild
then
hits.
it's like Graham Falk. Or like who it's not as like
Alison
the media do
McCall's a little
Alison
bit of
McCall.
criticism. Like, there's been nothing super strong.
No, nobody has called for him to be, even we haven't called for him to be sacked. And we've like more or
Craig
less
Fowler did like months ago.
There's not been a consistent, like, you know, anti-Pedro
I wouldn't
thing in the
describe it as
media.
an agenda anyway, like, because
There's
he was
not
talking
been,
before the game about how, for a start, if Steve Clark said that competitive fixtures are the exact same as friendly fixtures because he gets paid the same, he'd probably get sacked. Or at the very least,
yeah.
he'd be going around sports, like sports team would just have a whole day of
Yeah, my
conversation
guy,
of like,
yeah.
Steve Clark is not professional enough to take this job on.
My guy is lucky that he's not like the Scottish women's national team should have way more interest in it from Scottish football fans in general. But if there were more Scottish football fans interested in women's football, my guy would not handle the pressure at all.
We asked the question, obviously, like after the game, is that like enough for you guys to start changing your opinions on Pedro? And we got an overwhelmingly negative response. I don't think we've ever had a negative response. And we want more replies to our tweets. We'd like more positive replies to our tweets. It was crazy. Everyone was just saying no, basically. And then he goes on a wild rant about the media and how there's some conspiracy against him or whatever. In which he also said that when he was appointed, one of his aims that he said was that he wanted to raise the very basic standards and lack of opportunities in Scottish women's football, which he said to Graham, or I'm taking that from Graham Falk's article in The Scotsman. And he didn't say that. Graham Falk literally went back and checked. He didn't say that when he was appointed. So he's just lying in the media now, which is fine. But also, what very basic standards and what lack of opportunities? Because all the players that he's giving opportunities to had made their Scotland debut under Stuart McLaren. The very basic standards were already being raised because the league had already become professional and also teams were going towards full-time contracts. Like, that's not true.
Yeah, the
And
national
if
team had
you're,
also
if,
just qualified for, you know, a World Cup,
yeah,
the Euros.
we'd gone to back-to-back tournaments, and then you can even go as far as saying, like, what's he then done to raise the very basic standards of Scottish women's football if he's not going to games unless he's invited to be a pundit? We know from speaking to people within the SWPL that he has turned down invites or left early when being asked to go to training and things like that to go see the players. Like, if he wants to raise the standard of Scottish women's football, he needs to actively do that. He can't just say he's done it. If anything, the SWPL has grown in spite of Scotland, because we've seen record attendances every year. We've seen them every month almost. And we're going to talk about another game that sold out later. Scottish attendances have dropped.
Well, we spoke before about the kind of role the national team can play for like player development in terms of like if you call up a semi-pro player, they get that kind of appearance and then they get pro contract. And you've seen that in the men's team, like for instance, like probably like players like Ryan Porteous and stuff like that when they were at Hibs, getting a call up, even not just that, but definitely play if the national team raises the profile. So he's got the role to do in terms of, he can raise players' profiles directly, but then it also has the reverse effect where, if he completely ignores them, goes that standard football must be so bad because they can't even get into the Scotland team. And then without even thinking about it, people can just write off everyone outside of the top three.
I don't even think he's really paying that much attention to SWPL anyway, because I'd say that the players that he's giving opportunities to had already been in Scotland once. It's not like, other than Emma Watson and Kirsty MacLean, who obviously were children before he was before he was appointed, he's not exactly bringing new players in. So, I mean, I think you can probably tell anyone listening to this that we do not love Pedro. I've seen one person, and it was based on the fact that we had won a game in the last 14 months because we beat the Philippines. Because you like basically Pedro's nonsense about how competitive and non-competitive games are the same thing had managed to reach through this one person. I don't understand how anyone listened to that and was like, yeah, you've got a point actually. But yeah, so we were asked by James Keep on Twitter to talk about who replaces Pedro if he goes, because it's the age-old women's football thing at the moment where it's like, oh, well, you can't sack Pedro Martins Lossa, so you can't sack Mark Skinner because there's no one to replace him. There's no
Just given new
managers that are any good.
contracts.
So we thought we'd obviously discuss that, and I have prepared my names knowing that you think about the Scottish job differently from me, and we all have our own like vibes where some people think it has to be someone Scottish, some people think it doesn't really matter. I know that you differ from we've had arguments about this in the past, so I know that you'll have a bit different managers from me.
Probably.
So do you want to kick us off?
No, please. I wanna hear what my view of Scott Ashton is from your point of view.
From
It
our
sounds like you're
conversations in
gonna
the
have way
past.
more kind of fun to talk about names, because mine'll just be probably just Grant Scott, to be honest with you.
So I mean, from when we've talked in the past, I know that you don't necessarily believe they have to be Scottish, but I know you subscribe a little bit to the they have to know Scottish football.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's proven across NFL time and time again. And you never like comparing the men's game and stuff, but Steve Clarke is like unbelievable success. Scottish man, knows the league really well, knows the players, understands the quality, understands that, Ryan Porteous, etc., are actually quite good, even though they don't play for two teams, which is a lot easier to do.
Yeah.
I think Grant Scott would call up Hearts players because he'd go, they're good, and I've played against them and coached against them, etc.
I would also say that new Wales manager is Canadian, the former and more successful Canadian women's
Yeah, I mean,
manager
it's obviously
who
not just
is
like a
English.
blanket statement that they must know the game. Obviously, you have success
Yeah,
elsewhere, but
I think that the more important thing is that they have the ability to respect the country that they are working in, which is something that I really think Pedro lacks. I think that's one of the biggest problems is that he wants us to play, I was going to say his style of football. He wants us to play Spanish football, and we're not Spanish. That seems to be the biggest problem that he has. But yeah, so I've picked two managers that have got. I've sort of focused quite a lot on like more of the off the pitch stuff, because I think there is quite a lot of work we need to do. And I think that the national team head coach should be more vocal in demanding those standards, because when the players led by Rachel Corsey were going against the SFA, Pedro wasn't to be seen. And I think that's disappointing. I think the manager should be really, really vocal in that. And I think to go look at the NCAA women's basketball, and you look at like Dawn Staley, where she's talking about trans inclusion and things like that, and she's been really vocal about those issues, partly because she knows she's not going to get sacked, she's a legend, but also because like that is something that I think is really important for a head coach to do. So the first one is impossible. Carmelina Moscato. She was available in January, but now she is the she's the Racing Louisville assistant manager. She was a Canada international. She's managed a bunch of teams, Norseland and Tigres, most notably. At Tigres, she was the first foreign manager to win the Liga MX's Apertura. All of her players spoke so highly of how she treated them. And she's had experience above, like a sort of a director of football. She's had experience really fighting for change, especially in Mexico, when it comes to pushing for improved quality of facilities and things. And from what I've heard of her time in Mexico, especially, she really adapted what she wanted to do to what the players could do in the style of the league and the country she was managing in, understanding the sort of cultural differences of football. And then the other one, also probably impossible, but they have just not qualified for the Olympics, Desiree Ellis from South Africa. She's the South African head coach. She was really impressive at the World Cup. Scotland would be an opportunity. I mean, we're not going to go into the unfortunate colonial history of this, but Scotland would be an opportunity to work with a bigger budget and, you know, more like resources than she has at South Africa. And it is something she's spoken about in the past, is about how disappointed she's been, like, with the resources she has available to her. And in theory, we have more money because history is bad. But she's done a lot fighting for sort of better in women's football, especially in South Africa. She speaks really well. Obviously, yes, she doesn't know the Scottish League, but she gets a lot out of a lot of players that aren't playing at the same level as other national teams have. And she's done a lot of things where she's obviously calling up a lot of players from the South African League, which is a good league within the context of Africa, but it's a top-heavy league. And as you'd expect, there aren't the resources available for a lot of things. And she's been quite proactive in calling up players from that league and helping them get better opportunities to move to full-time football and things. So I'd like either of them. I mean, to be honest, I'd like someone that knows about Scottish women's football, but then at the same time, Brian Graham's not going to take the job. Joe Potter has just signed a contract extension. I'm not sure about Elena Siddiqui at the moment. Fran Alonso has just signed for a new club. And I don't really want it to go to Grant Scott because I like him being at Hibs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, you've done a lot of research into fund managers there that seem unattainable, to be honest with you. But
we are, I feel like we are Scotland. I feel like it seems to be missed sometimes that, like, we invented this sport.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, if you had a
ever international game we played in.
If you had like a hiring party of people who were invested, you very much could go and go, we've got Caroline Weir, who plays for Real Madrid and outscored the Ballon d'Or winner. We've also got Aaron Cuthbert, who captains Chelsea regularly. This is an incredible group of players who could qualify and get to the latter stages of a tournament with a little bit of push. But we don't have that, so. So.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If we, I feel like these are ambitious but achievable. If I mean, probably not now because as they come in, Moscato just signed a contract. The reason that these are so well researched is because this is not the first time I have tried to answer this question.
Yeah, wait, up late at night, just like looking through anybody who could come to Scotland.
We've had a draft on our Substack for probably about 6 months of who could replace Pedro Martins Losa, and it is worth mentioning as well. Obviously, James keeps. Question. He did say that he would have picked Willie Kirk, and obviously now he wouldn't pick Willie Kirk because Willie Kirk is another member of
all men are trash, is the answer to that question. So
he's fallen well below the standards of professionalism, and it's just really disappointing to see because from someone that was so well respected in Scottish football. So yeah, I discounted him.
Can I throw a name out there? I just want to see your face when I say it. Phil Neville.
I genuinely would rather give Pedro Martins Losa a lifetime contract, giving it to unqualified men that are bad at football tactics.
Yeah.
And
yeah, lots of good names. My ideal would be Grant Scott. I think that also, I think, fits within, if you talk about Scotland and the SFA as a whole, with two A teams, you know, you've got the same kind of strategy for both. That's the same strategy. And like trusting into your, like, your league, trust into your, like, coaching standards and stuff like that. And
whoever
if people
it is
know,
needs a full-time coaching staff to back him up as well, which Pedro does not have. And we have mentioned this. I feel like we've always been quite fair on Pedro because we have always mentioned that he is also working with severe limitations.
Yeah, a lot of
He's not given the resources that he needs to succeed.
Yeah, that's for
so
sure.
Whoever it is does need to be supported a lot better than Pedro has been.
Would need much more buy-in, but that's like an entirely other podcast episode to talk about.
Like, look at this conversation about how we don't believe we would hire someone good. And then you look at the conversation around, should we be playing at Hampden anymore with the attendances so low? And it's the same thing of just the lack of ambition generally within Scottish football, like, especially in Scottish women's football, coming from those in charge. And I think it's depressing. It's as depressing as the football is on the pitch. It's just, not fun. So it's not a great conversation. I wonder what you think about Eva Holland.
Think of all things what you've followed.
Just as a just
Situation
no,
has
as a
gone.
Scotland manager.
I'd say probably too soon.
Probably, but I'm just thinking, like, I know obviously one of the things we criticize Pedro for is obviously not wanting to play Scottish football, and either Ollie probably would be a continuation of that, but I feel like
I think
she is
we
more
have
practical than
players.
he is.
We have the players to play Spanish football, more than good enough players. Like Nick Dock plays inverted centre
Well,
back or something like
I
that.
don't think that I don't when I say Scottish football, I don't think Scottish football is 10 behind the ball, hoofing it long, is kicking people. I
Right.
think that's like the caricature that comes out of England of what Scottish football is. I think our football is, high energy.
Yeah, on
Like, I'd probably say
the turn.
we're quite a pressing nation. A quick transitional vertical passing.
Yeah, I think we're quick one touch football. Get the ball on the turn, press a team,
Yeah,
like
like, and
rock and roll
also
football,
there's nothing
whatever.
wrong with hitting a 30 yarder. What
Yeah.
kind of pass gets more claps? A 5 yard sideways pass or a 40 yarder cross field goal?
There is nothing Scottish fans love more than like a wicked ball in the box and like a diving header. Like that's just
Yeah,
the best thing in the world.
I
Like
mean,
in a muddy pitch as well.
or even, but even just like literally a fullback switching the ball to the opposite wing is
Yeah,
like that
blood,
get it gets Scottish fans off their
well, in
seats
that
because
case, it's got to be
also
Fran
like,
Alonso,
I mean,
who I
it
would
could be
have as my
Fran.
manager. If you're talking about like you mentioned earlier about like the culture and change and all of that. There is nobody better, I don't think, in like world football to do that right now than Fran Alonso.
Yeah,
He
but
won't. He
also
would
is
not. He
East.
would never take the job.
Houston fans are also already not very impressed.
Houston fans have done this shit, but like he definitely would not do international, I don't think. But if your aim was to create a better atmosphere and to attract more fans to the game, Fran Alonso would do that.
There are plenty of managers that could do the job comfortably. I mean, I know people would be maybe a little more hesitant to have someone English in charge, but like genuinely, Carlo Ward, like,
Yeah, I would argue that it's not a hard job. The players that we have to
no.
qualify for Euros shouldn't be
Well,
hard.
look at the SFL. Look how many players in the SFL are absolutely thriving on the internationals. So, I mean, one of the things I wrote down that I wanted to mention is that Rachel Rowe in the international break scored, what, three, got two assists? Like, yeah, scored three, got two assists. Like, Rachel Rowe is not the best midfielder in the SFL. She's very good. And we were singing her praises like 2 weeks ago, but she's the best midfielder in the SFL. And there are also young midfielders that are Scottish doing the same thing, but they're not getting called up.
Yeah, Vic Essien
Not
kept, I
to,
think, a clean sheet for New Zealand as well.
yeah, the league's so exciting and so full of Scottish talent doing things like over and above the performances that we're seeing from players that are getting called up by other countries and then they're succeeding on the international stage for those countries. Like Ireland only lost 2-0 to England. That's not a great result for them. And they've all come out after the game frustrated. They didn't get anything out of
Well,
it.
Caitlin
They came
Hayes has
out of
gone
the
to that
France
island.
game after losing 1-0. Like regretting a missed opportunity at the end, and again talking about how disappointed they are not to take a point out of that. Which, if Ireland's ambition is to beat England and France, and our ambition is to only just beat Slovakia, there's a huge problem. But Caitlin Hayes is at the heart of that defence. The fact that you can even have that conversation when she's not,
The
way ahead of everyone else, then like surely we must be good enough also to only lose 1-0 to France.
data. And then on the island point as well, they
So
just
yeah.
had a like a sold out Aviva basically. Or
Yeah, and they also had 10 times the amount of people at the
yeah.
Aviva for the England game than we had for the game at Slovakia. There were more people there than were at the were at Hampden for the England game against Scotland, which we obviously got embarrassed in. Which then begs the question, like, why is the SFPL getting such growth and the national team is tanking?
Which is a big shame on the players because the players are the
Players
best
are
bit
great.
of the setup, which I guess is
Rachel Corsi deserved 50,000 people on their feet, giving her a standing ovation after 150. She had a really good game. I say I don't think she was the best defensive player, but she still had a really good game. She was probably our most progressive midfielder, which is a crazy thing to say. And she's been such a leader for us. And we did our little thread about things that we've appreciated her in her time. And like she left the Kansas City Current in a really poor moment where she was sort of kicked out for making too much of a noise by the accounts of journalists in America. But she stayed on as vice president of the NWSL Players Association and then helped them get through the CBA which introduced free agency to the NWSL. It improved conditions, it improved the minimum wage. And she did that while playing in a different country on the other side of the world. She's openly spoken about trans inclusion. She's openly spoken about disappointment with the SFA. She's not been afraid to stand up for what she believes is right to make the game better.
Yeah.
And
also has a great podcast.
She deserves all the love in the world from Scotland. And she's not getting that. And it's so, I'm heartbroken for her because she deserves it. She really does. And it's such a shame that because of things out of her control and off-field issues that are coming from people that just aren't interested in women's football, she's not getting the 30, 50K attendances to play in front of in Scotland. She's getting them when she plays in the WSL, of course, because, you know, WSL clubs can manage it, Ireland can manage it, SWPL clubs can manage it. It's a Scotland problem.
There's way more ambition within the clubs, which, I mean, I guess we can do it the hard way and go bottom up.
Yeah, I mean, not to steal your job, but shall we take a quick break and then talk about that now?
Yeah. But yeah, the SWPL returns this week after, if you couldn't tell, a depressing week off. Thankfully, we got a full game week across the SWPL 2 and the SWPL 1, not in that order. So look forward to it. The first game, obviously look forward to, we'll do it in chronological order, is Hearts v Hibs at Orium this Friday night. Sold out Orium, which I don't know how many seats are in Orium, but sold out.
Yeah, I don't know the capacity, but it's definitely, I think it's still positive even if the capacity is small, because we don't see SWPL venues sell out often.
Must be a fair few number, because obviously there'll be seats and they'll be, you know, probably standing around the sides and that, so it must be a fair number.
Yeah,
for Friday night at Riccarton. So
a couple hundred. I mean, they literally moved the game to Friday to try and encourage more fans to go, and then they sold out, you know, with 5 days to go till the game. Like, it's impressive. It's a really good moment for us. And we should be celebrating the small moments as well. The big events at Tynecastle and at Easter Road and, you know, across the country at Fir Park this weekend with Motherwell, for example, they're important and they really do help and get more eyes on it and help people see how good the game is. But at the end of the day, they are often run at a loss. So this is a moment for Hearts and Hibs to really celebrate how they have worked together, something we do not see enough in Scottish football, to increase, you know, foot traffic in women's football and increase attendances and help push the standard of the game on.
Well, speaking like, I guess, of the game in particular, how are you feeling going into that? You've got the defence for Hearts, which you mentioned earlier, being very, very strong. Like, so Georgia Hunter, Carter, Soley, Emma Brownlee, up against Jorian Bokum, who is our stand now.
Yeah, I mean, I need her to play well, because otherwise I look like a tit, don't I?
Best striker the league's ever seen, I think, was the words.
Because of you clipping me out of context. even if the context is me saying that she's the best player in the league, I don't care.
But do you still back her that back line?
It's probably, I mean, she sort of owned them a little bit at Easter Road, but I'm not super confident about it. My biggest worry is Lee Eddy being injured with Kathleen McGovern back. That is a concern because Siobhan Hunter's fitness is unknown. She's not really been playing loads recently. She's not been coming off the bench either. And yeah, I mean, as you say, they've got a really good defence and we're lacking for forward options at the moment with Ailey Adams being injured. Abby Ferguson's just back from injury, so hopefully she's fit enough to play because she's really impressed in the big stadium games against Hearts. I'm not confident. We've had the upper hand in the past and I do think that plays into it. But I also know that it's not like they've never beaten us, especially not at Orium. With Grant Scott speaking so openly about his desire to return Hibs back to the top, obviously having won more cups than anyone else, something that I think some people would be, you know, good to remember. But I think that, like, that's his ambition. We then need to be winning against Hearts and Partizan, and we need to be competing against the top three in this post-split period. And but this is a post-split game that you would mark as being a winnable tie. Although away from home against your major rivals, it's never going to be easy. So as a fan, I think the more important bit is the bragging rights and the vibes that come from beating Hearts. And then coming fourth is obviously a bonus.
I guess talk about league positions then. The other game this weekend, which is probably the standout fixture from a neutral point of view, would be Rangers taking on Glasgow City, which is at Broadwood Stadium, and it's the first game actually of the season live in Sky Sports, apart from the cup.
One of the Edinburgh derbies, maybe.
To come on, but this is the first one post-split, anyway, definitely.
Because what
It's the first game.
they only get five. They do have to pick them quite
Yeah.
well, and they
So
only get
they're
four if you get
naturally.
the cup final.
Yeah, it's live in Sky Sports for 3 o'clock kickoff, so.
On that note, can I just say something? Because as we've discovered, me saying things on this podcast means they happen in real life, a la Kilmarnock tweeting. Sky Sports women's football account is called Sky Sports WSL, and on that account they tweet about the SWPL, they tweet about Ireland's national team and Scotland's national team, and it annoys me endlessly. Just rebrand it to Sky Sports Women's Football. You're not only talking about the WSL. That maybe that's my thing for 2024. I'm going to speak things into
People in
existence.
business get a little
I would
more.
like Sky to do that.
Fair enough. Well, Sky, listen up, Big Gordon, pay attention. Regarding the game, I suppose as a whole, we spoke about how the fact the first game's post-split are almost like anticlimactic, but is this the one that is not anticlimactic? Because should City lose, are they out of title race? Do you think entirely? They'd be 7 points behind Rangers. Still no.
No, but I
Okay.
think it would be like a big ask, I think.
Because they'd only play Rangers one more time. They'd have to beat Rangers and Celtic, and then also them drop points. So,
It's
but
the
you.
split. Every game from now on is a losable game.
Yep.
Like Rangers is it's not unlikely that both Rangers and Celtic drop 7 points from now to the end of the season. Especially when they both have to play each other and Glasgow
That's
City.
true. That's true.
That's six. Rangers just need to draw
Yeah.
one game. Like that's such a high bar. I do think that for them to be really in it, they have to at least draw this game.
I'm
I
gonna
think if
say, just for my own, I like this clippable things. If Rangers do beat Glasgow City are not gonna win the league title.
they probably won't, but they could. They're not out of it. That's
Okay,
my point.
I'm saying they won't. They are out of title race if they lose on Sunday. Just to pile pressure on.
Okay.
Do my
I
best
think
to piss
that's
that impression, sir.
a That's a crazy statement, I think. But I think that they have to at least draw to really be like, I think if they lose, then we can stop talking about it being a three-way title race. But if they draw, I think they're still, I mean, they're well enough to draw. But I think that it's their biggest problem is that we've said it before, the focus on beating Rangers at the moment is the winning the midfield battle. That seems to be the blueprint. And there's no news on Matty Fulton, and Rich Rowe is in the form of her life. So winning that midfield battle looks a lot more difficult than it did 2 weeks ago. And then you've also got Kirsty Howard is another week more fit than she was. So
Yeah, I think Rangers
she has a week off.
looking dangerous.
Yeah, I think Rangers will win. I think that Glasgow City, I mean, we spoke about it last week, their squad just doesn't really make sense for what they want to do. And I think that they've just fallen foul of maybe it is because of the money involved, maybe it's something else. I don't know. I just think that I just don't love their squad,
I do think
really.
to be fair, they've been a bit patchwork this year. I'll give them a bit credit. They've like, lost Jenna Clark, Brendan Laverre is out injured.
Lyndon Bosallow
It
leaving, I think,
it
has actually
feels
been
a
a
wee
bigger
bit.
thing.
It feels like a wee bit transitioning. Like last year, they obviously won the title, but it was such a messy year. Like with Aileen Gleeson in there, leaving the Emirates taking over, players coming and going, injuries, signing new players. Like seems like it's not quite settled. So I think if they can get to the summer, settle the squad down, like they're not away. They'll come back next year, but. I just think the past couple of years have been a little bit like hectic for City, which is hard for them to manage as like a individual club.
Yeah, I think they need to go back to their sort of roots of they used to obviously always they used to just sign the best players in Scotland. Any ambitious player in Scotland that was of a high level that Hibs didn't have, essentially. Whereas now they seem to be focusing more on players from other leagues that have been full time for longer and things. And I think that they should go back maybe to their roots a wee bit and start looking at those players that, and this does hurt for me to say because some of them are obviously playing for Hibs. But some of those players in the top six outside of the top.
Just as a general point around the SWPL is to trust the SWPL more, like for Rangers and Celtic as well. You know, we mentioned like Hutchison at Aberdeen and stuff like that. Trust that the league is of a high calibre and that there are very good players within the league that you don't have to go looking for some college graduate from America or whatever. Like there's some pretty good players just up the A9 kind of thing. So,
Unless it's Teagan Browning, I guess.
yeah, I suppose so.
Scottish with SWPL experience and also a college graduate. I mean, like what, you know.
Best case scenario in that sense, but in the bottom six, it's another round of fixtures post-split as well. A few good ones in there. I think the best game probably be Spartans v Montrose. There's not really
I mean,
very many
that's
high
huge
stakes this
relegation
weekend, but
wise. That one's huge relegation wise. It not currently, because
yeah,
neither team is in the relegation zone. But whoever loses that becomes the team
the closest team
for
to
Dundee United to aim for.
yeah. But Dundee United and Hamilton are both playing Aberdeen and Motherwell. They're
Oh, I
probably lose
love
those games
those.
and stay dead last. So that's we're just kind of hanging around there waiting for Dundee to play Hamilton again. So yeah, Motherwell playing Dundee United and Aberdeen playing Hawanakes. It is a fair park though for Motherwell game. So
Hopefully they'll get a big attendance as well. Motherwell have had a good season, and it would be good to see. They've got a lot of really good players, and as you want the league to grow equally, I do think that Motherwell maybe don't do as much as they could do. I do think Motherwell don't do as much as they could do, but they've increased how much they've done year on year, and it's important for them to
yeah.
exist.
Looking to the SAPL 2 now. Got a whole range of pictures there to look forward to. Hard to pick out one game from that because it's all kind of a mishmash at the moment. I mean, Queen's Park could, I think, if my maths is correct, win the league title this weekend by
Yes.
beating Stirling Uni at home, which is an interesting weekend to not play it at City Stadium, but fair enough.
I mean, probably more just because like it's reliant on another club elsewhere, and it's not the last game of the season.
Yeah, probably. Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully Queen's
It'll
Park
just be
do.
the
I'm
next
looking
home
forward
game.
to. Well, this has been inevitable for a while, though. We've seen Queen's Park going to go up, and looking forward to seeing Ellie Kane and go in the SAPL 1 next year.
I mean, the journey really starts now to sort of that SWPL 1 sort of season, securing it not being just a season. Like, it's going to be interesting to see how they approach it, because we've seen sort of different approaches recently from different clubs. And are they going to stick with the players that got them there? Are they going to maybe try and bring in some more SFL 1 experienced players? And can they even keep the squad together with the ones that they want to keep together? Because there will be a lot of eyes, especially at the various Glasgow clubs in the bottom six, on a lot of their players. You've got players like Ellie Kane, obviously, who's had time at Accies as well, and Nicole Kearney and things, and they've all got SF1 experience, but they're also very young, so they'll definitely have caught the eye of a number of people. So they're tough to keep a hold of them, as well as tough to decide whether they stick or go with some more experienced players.
I mean, the other games in the league could look forward to. Kilmarnock are playing Glasgow Women, St Johnstone are playing Gartcairn, and Bournemouth are also playing Livingston. So it'll be interesting. I mean, Glasgow Women and Stirling Uni look like two games they'll probably both lose again, which keeps them still kind of neck and neck for the relegation battle. Bournemouth is over Livingston, it's just vibes right now. And so is St Johnstone and Gartcairn. Good times in the mid-table that has managed to be created. 8-team league. The only league in the world where I'm happy as a mid-table, because, like, is only for 8 teams. Have you achieved that? Oh, looking pretty good.
I mean, we've said it before, and we'll probably continue to say it for a while. I think that SFL2 is probably very ready to be expanded.
Yeah, I think that's something else we can chat about maybe in another episode with more time and discuss, like,
Although saying that, Ross Vale absolutely bottled, so maybe not.
your also look forward to across SUPL 1 and SUPL 2, but that's all we have time for chat this week. Obviously spoke about a lot about the national team. We'll be back again next week to catch up on all those SUPL action. And hope you all have a nice weekend. Watch football game, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Bye.